This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Vampires, zombies, ghouls, and creatures from outer space. No, it's not Federal Parliament. It's Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Tonight we have quite a bit happening.
I said before that our show is so full, like a club sandwich, that when you bite it, everything falls out. Like, it's just too full.
How do you eat yours? So do you eat yours without your hands?
Well, only if it's too full, you take the bite and everything falls out the other side.
Yeah. You get a knife and fork.
What kind of fancy sandwich are you eating?
A 5-star
dental toes.
All right, so we have got some chat. We've got news with Dr. Beddoes, interviews, well, one interview with Mr. Duke, the winner of the Art Boy Gallery horror competition.
Well, first, I want to welcome Dr. Beddoes to the studio.
Sorry.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome in the studio, Beddoes. She's part of the crew.
Yeah, yes. We just ignore her now.
Yeah, order her about. I don't get introductions anymore.
So part of the crew.
What else?
And so you interviewed Mr. Duke after he won the Art Boy Gallery competition, and he made these kind of cardboard images of...
Pennywise was the winner, but he did Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah. He did Johnny from The Shining.
And also Chucky. Spock, I saw. He had a Spock one also.
On his site, he does, on his page, but it wasn't actually in the exhibition. But he's going to be one of their house artists now, so that's cool. So we'll hear a bit...
I can't wait, because it was more screen printed, and so I can't wait to see what he said. What were some of the questions? Come on, throw it at me. What were some
we'll
of the questions?
To the interview later. Goodness me.
Oh, Sonia.
Right. And we've got two reviews, all right? Sightseers is one of them, and hence Tainted Love, because that's actually in the movie, apart from some other awesome songs.
And also Comic-Con, Ep IV. So four. Yes.
IV, number four. IV. It's Latin. Episode 4, A Fan's Hope. And yes, it was. And
A Fan's Hope. Now, this looked like a really, really interesting... Is it a documentary?
Yeah.
And it just looked amazing because I'm a con goer and we've gone to cons together, Sonia.
Yes, so we have.
I think
we
listen
lost each
into
other
that.
As well.
I did that on purpose.
I know. I was waiting in the rain and you never came back. All right. So we've got that and some news, as I mentioned.
Oh, just some news. Some amazing news about sci-fi and horror and what's happening in the biz.
Yep.
Now we have a track. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Armin Shimmerman. You're listening to Sci-Fi Scream on Joy 94.9. Live long and be prosperous.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, and tonight we are talking about Asian Horror 101.
That was Lulu.
So that was Lulu, To Sir With Love, and we'll get onto that in a second. But first, if you have any favourite Asian horror movies, you can message them or you can email us. And so yeah, I'm kind of going through a couple of the really, really good movies that I know of, and I'm not an expert, so if you do have any other information about the movies, it's good to hear. And you can go onto our Facebook, Sci-Fi and Scream, just search it in. So this is a little sound of what I'm about to talk about. Yes, that's right. It was To Sir With Love from Korea. Now, Korea remade this film, and... In, what year?
2006.
And so, you know, you think, oh, what a lovely film about a teacher helping students out and such. But in actual fact, it's not about that at all. It's about a reunion that 6 students have with their teacher. And it's meant to be maybe 16 years after they graduate. And so it was released, aka My Teacher or Teacher's Mercy, and released on DVD in US as The Bloody Reunion. The teacher molds the character of the children. She's the second year mother. She teaches us, well, that's what they say, us, what is right and wrong. Mija, who has been taking care of a retired teacher, Miss Park, invites several of her former students to her house, 16 years after their graduation. Since the end of her teaching career, Park has been residing in the countryside, suffering from an illness while her ex-student, Mija, cares for her. Now that sounds so sweet. So many lovely students. But the students that were invited were belittled by the teacher for being poor, and they all really resent her. And these are the reasons why. Sun-hee, skinny and beautiful, was made fun of by the teacher for being obese during her high school years. Dal-bong, who had a dream of becoming a baseball player, becomes handicapped due to the severe corporal punishment. Myung-ho was sexually abused by his teacher, and she also used to lock her deformed son, who wore a bunny mask, in the dark basement while other children made fun of him.
That's something you'd never see Sydney Poitier doing.
No,
that's all I can say.
Or Lulu.
So I'm like, no. This is a really interesting take on Tussauds with Love. Mm-hmm. As the night of the reunion continues, the students start to die from the hands of a bunny masked killer.
Oh,
Si-ho is killed when the killer stuffs pieces of a cutter into his mouth and applies hot water from the teapot. Really crazy stuff. And Young is killed when her eyes are stapled.
Oh.
As you do, again. But
how does that kill you? Just having your eyes stapled shut?
Well, she was the beautiful one.
Maybe she walks into something. Like a car. I don't know. It's moving.
You don't have to watch it to find out.
Yeah.
And Dal-bong is killed when the killer stuffs black ants into his body and smashes his head with a baseball bat.
Mm.
During the movie, the bunny mask killer is assumed to be her deformed son coming back for revenge. Because, as you remember, I said maybe a few minutes earlier, he was teased.
Yeah, bullying. See, this is about bullying. It's
exactly,
not good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Thank you, Asian horror.
There's a moral lesson in there.
There is a moral lesson. Yeah. And so it's a really, really interesting movie from Korea. And another one that is really good from Korea is Tale of Two Sisters.
Oh, I've seen that one.
Now, this is a really, really interesting story about two sisters and their stepmother, the relationship between the three. And, you can choose your friends, but not your family, especially in this one. And it's a psychological horror film that follows the two sisters who are sick as thieves, and they both cope with the recent loss of their mother. But their emotionally absent father and their cold new stepmother do not make it easy, nor do the strange events that have been occurring around the house.
Yeah, the house in the film is the best part.
Yeah.
The acting is just nonsense, and the plot is even sillier, but the house and the kind of the haunting aspects to it, and it's beautifully filmed. I remember it was there's amazing scenes of the wallpaper all turning to blood, and it's pretty effective on the screen.
Yeah, it's got a lot of really good visual effects.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the story, but the visual effects are pretty spine tingling.
Well, the story is pretty much like the girl keeps on seeing a woman around the house, and like, she ends up with bruises. Because I think the girls are twins. I can't remember.
Yes, they're twins. That's right.
And so one of the twins doesn't know about it, and the other twin does. And one gets bruises and starts cutting. And then other people start seeing this woman more frequently. Hiding.
Who is this woman?
The woman.
Does she pay rent?
And get out of our house. And they call the little girl a liar. And then the little girl starts blaming her stepmother. And trying to victimize the stepmother, saying that she's the one that's hitting her. And so that's, you can see how it's a psychological thriller.
Yeah,
because
it's twisted.
People don't know who's hitting her. Is it the stepmother, or is it this weird figure that's around the house? So it's just kind of a mysterious monster kind of story throughout the movie. Now we're going to go to a review. I'm going to play the trailer to it, and Sonia's going to have a little bit of a chat about it. And
Sightseers.
So we're going to talk about Sightseers. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Show me your world, Chris.
Well, I thought we'd start with Crouch Tram Museum.
Great.
Dear Mum, Yorkshire is lovely, not like you said at all. They can smile, and they do sell my pasta sauce. The caravan bed is quite short, but Chris is a sensitive lover. Hope you can be happy for me. Love, Tina.
Yeah, good girl.
You are going to pick that up.
I didn't do that.
If you don't pick up this excrement immediately, then I'm going to have to inform the National Trust.
Report that to the National Trust, mate.
I don't want this to ruin our holiday.
Get in.
Never thought about murdering innocent people before.
It's not a person, Tina. He's a Daily Mail reader. Say one word and it's...
I get it, it's just thinking outside the box.
The police are pursuing a ginger-faced man and an angry woman.
Sit!
You're a liability. You're just like your mother.
Is it
gone wrong?
Yeah, a bit.
You didn't let him see you do number twos, did you, Tina?
Show me your world, Chris.
And that is Sightseer's trailer.
Okay, Evil has a knitted jumper. And Death has a ginger beard. Killers like this have never been so close-knit. This is Sightseers, or Tourists in French, as it's been released in France this month. It stars Steve Oram as Chris, with the ginger beard, and Alice Lowe as poor little Tina. But this is not an ordinary horror film from the cold, wet isles of the green, far-off country north, aka Britain. No, this is a carefully plotted and deftly worked dark comedy from a fascinating and brilliant group of minds, you could say, from the imaginations of the lead actors themselves, Alice Lowe and Steve Oram, who together fought up the characters of Tina and Ginger 7 years ago as they plucked memories from their own childhood holidays, but obviously with a twist. It was a story considered too dark, so now it has become a film. Now, Alice Lowe, who plays Tina, approached her friend Edgar Wright, who she's worked with before in the past. He has worked with her on films like Shaun of the Dead and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. And as Alice Lowe says, the green light was given by Edgar Wright, thankfully. Otherwise, we wouldn't see this little gem from Britain. I would describe it best as being like Natural Born Killers meets Mike Lee with a lot more darkness and gonks. Yes, gonks. The plot is pretty much goes like this. Tina's going on a getaway in a caravan adventure with her new love interest, ginger-bearded Chris, who she met at a capoeira martial arts class. Tina seems to have a breather from her attention-seeking mum, which she sorts after. Her mum is a control freak and loves nothing more than laying guilt trips on the shy and unassuming Tina. Mum says things like, you know, you're a murderer and stuff like that. We find out a bit later has something to do with mum's little terrier who passed away and being stabbed with a knitting needle. But enough of that. Anyway, the knight in an outdoor parka and hiking boots is Chris with his woolly hat and takes Tina on an adventure of a lifetime. He whisks her away in his trusty caravan to go camping through the British Isles to find some fascinating places to go to, as Tainted Love, which we played earlier by Soft Cell, pounds in the soundtrack. Now, Chris has got quite a holiday planned for them. First stop is the tram village and museum in a place called Critch. And that's where we get a taste of Chris's lack of tolerance for people who are litter bugs. There's a large man who litters everywhere. And he's described by Tina as a pig with clothes on. And we find out that, spoiler alert, Chris decides to back the caravan over on this poor man. Well, he did litter. So, you know, maybe
like
he asked for it.
I don't like people who litter either.
Litter bugs don't like that.
Because I always step on gum.
Yeah, I hate gum.
I hate stepping on gum so much.
Because it's been in other people's mouths.
I don't care about that. It's just my shoe is stuck to the floor. Sorry, continue.
All right, so I think you get the idea with this film. This is not Vacation. This is something that I haven't seen before in a genre horror film. They are serial killers, as it turns out. It does rain a lot, and there are some bizarre sex scenes, which are particularly unattractive or gritty social and social realism, I guess, but without the leftist sympathies, which you usually get from a film like, similar to this, like Mike Lee's Nuts in May or Ken Loach's social realism. This is for laughs and at times quite uncomfortable and squeamish, which we like. Now, throw in some darkly absurd sort of things that Ben Wheatley, who's the director, does so well, and that is his occupation or preoccupation with paganism, and in particular English paganism and dancing round campfires and tribal drums and so things like that, including a chicken sacrifice in the film. But it's not as pagan as his earlier film from 2011, which was Kill List, which I know Mitch saw, and I don't think you were that impressed with it.
It was
Kill List.
Okay. I wasn't very impressed. It was okay. So.
So this couple are going through the countryside of England, through all the sacred rock sites, not Stonehenge, but maybe some smaller versions of Stonehenge with menhirs and stone circles and so on, through the pubs and so forth. They go to pencil museums where you can buy giant pencils, and they start collecting gonks as they go. The first gonk they collect is actually from the first murder that they've committed. So it's quite interesting. It's fun. I guess you call it.
Collect little items as you go along and kill different people. Yeah. I like that.
Look, I really liked this film. It's quite bleak but funny. It's got a lot of that English sensibility and irony in it. There's some deadpan moments, and there's a dog as well, a cute terrier dog called Poppy. Played by a dog called Smurf. That's the dog's real name, Smurf. I like it. I'm giving it a 4 out of 5. I look forward to seeing this trio work again, Ben Wheatley, Alice Lowe, and Steve Oram. It does have some pretty graphic, gory moments involving sticks smashed on people's heads, pushing people off rock faces, jumping off rock faces. It has it all, but it has lovely scenery at the same time. You see the lovely Yorkshire moors and the English countryside.
I feel like this episode has just been describing death scenes.
It's a bit horrific, isn't it? So, yeah, it's only at the Nova at the moment, and it's distributed through Rialto Australia. Go and see it if you get a chance. It's 88 minutes of sightseeing fun. That's Sightseers from Ben Wheatley. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Hey, this is Fran Kranz, Joss Whedon's Basil, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on 94.9.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Now, we had a message from James, and he wants to know, James from Elfin, what is a gonk? Well, a gonk is a collectible little fluffy thing that you put on your mantelpiece at home in England. They can be Vikings. They can be types of owls. They can be almost a troll, but not quite. They normally don't have legs, and they're just like a fluffy dice without hanging it on your rear vision mirror. They're like big eyes and those little eyes that move around. Yes, that's it.
It's a hella ugly Furby.
And, of course, they feature in Sightseers, the Ben Wheatley movie that I reviewed just a few moments back.
Mm-hmm. And now, science fiction news.
Hey, Sci-Fi and Squeamers, it's Dr. M here, back with the latest in science fiction and fantasy news. Fans of Joss Whedon's Firefly and Serenity will be thrilled to find out that the Serenity Lego set is now a reality. Some of you might remember that a few months ago, the project featured on Lego QSO, an online branch of the Lego company that allows aspiring Lego designers to pitch their ideas to the Lego community. Any project that receives more than 10,000 votes is reviewed and has the chance to become an official Lego product. Now, whilst the Serenity set didn't win one of the coveted crowdsourced QSO spots, it has been approved as an unlicensed set and is currently available for sale at etadyne.com. That's etadyne.com. The minifig set, including all 9 cast members and Jane's beanie, is sold separately. Now, last week it was the original Batmobile, and this week it looks like it's Star Wars memorabilia. That's right, selected items from episodes 4, 5, and 6, or 1, 2, and 3, depending on how you look at it, are now up for auction at profilesinhistory.com. Items added include, but are not limited to, an X-Wing fighter, Yoda's head, and a full-size Rebel Alliance fighter pilot helmet. For those of you lamenting the addition of a further 3 films, or just feeling nostalgic, now might be the time to invest in your very own piece of original Star Wars history. Now, if original props from the Star Wars movie set might be a little over budget, as of today, Downey's Coins are distributing a limited edition set of Star Wars coins in collectible packaging for purchase on their website. The set of 4 coins include images of Anakin Skywalker, Queen Amidala, Yoda, and Darth Maul, with each featuring an effigy of Queen Elizabeth II on the backside. The set can be bought either in a Darth Vader helmet or Millennium Falcon package, each of which plays authentic movie sound effects from the series when opened. Now, these are definitely a collector's item and there are only a limited number available, so make sure you head to the website now at www.downies.com to check them out. Hey, and they're even legal tender on Niue Island. As if you would ever want to use them, though.
Oh, I wonder what you were talking about. Niue.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Excuse my pronunciation.
That's all right.
Legal tender on Niue Island. Yeah, but they're a collectible item. Don't spend them.
It's in New Zealand, I think.
It's
Niue.
It's north of New Zealand.
It is. In more Star Wars news, Samuel L. Jackson has announced that he will definitely be returning for Episode 7 as Mace Windu. Despite Windu's death scene in Episode 3, Jackson is open to the possibility of alternate storylines. In a recent interview, he claimed, "Maybe everyone thinks I'm dead and we'll find out what really happened to Mace Windu. I can come back as one-armed or a one-handed Jedi that's still around that didn't actually die." He also suggested that he might come back as a ghost or a hologram, but added that he doesn't really care because, and I quote, "he's just totally geeked out at the idea of being a continuing part of the franchise." So more Samuel L. Jackson for us.
It's always good.
Yes. Now, one of the creepiest and most beautiful films I've ever seen, Pan's Labyrinth, is set to be adapted into a stage musical. Director and writer Guillermo del Toro, possibly one of the busiest men in the horror business at the moment, has been working on the musical version of Pan's Labyrinth for 4 years now. Now, as a movie, Pan's Labyrinth was terrifying, stunning, and captivating. As a stage play, I imagine watching this would be like being enveloped in a gothic, Lovecraftian nightmare. I'm in.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I think it'd be really silly.
I
will shoot you now.
No, come on. It would be great.
I will cut your face.
Don't touch the food, little girl.
So there's no word yet on when we can expect this truly stunning and nightmarish spectacle to hit the stage, but we will definitely update you when we know. Now, only last week we were talking about Wonder Woman. Now it looks like classic television episodes from Wonder Woman and Superboy will be made available on DVD for the first time. From today at WarnerArchive.com, you can buy the pilot from the 1974 version of Wonder Woman, starring tennis pro Kathy Lee Crosby, and Superboy Season 2. So it could be the perfect Christmas present for that hard-to-buy-for fan. For details, go to WarnerArchive.com. Hmm. In Doctor Who news, the upcoming Christmas special promises a few new twists, including a revamped TARDIS interior and Sir Ian McKellen playing the voice of the Snowman, the episode's not-so-festive villain.
Do you know the TARDIS is a female?
I did not.
The TARDIS is a woman.
I think I've heard that, yeah.
I didn't know
that. So,
I don't think it should have a gender.
I didn't realise it did.
It's his wife, apparently.
Oh, piss off.
That's a bit strange.
No.
Well, anyway, that's okay. British fantasy author Neil Gaiman has paid tribute to popular gay web series Husbands in an introduction to a hardcover version of the digital comic book based on the series. The web series, originally written by Jane Espenson, known for
everything.
Yes, Buffy, Once Upon a Time, as well as everything else, gets a fantasy spin in its comic book form, where the gay couple are thrust into a series of fantastic adventures after receiving a magical wedding gift. The web series is a straight rom-com set in an alternate world where gay marriage is legal in every state of America. The hardcover version of the fantasy comic, including the introduction by Neil Gaiman, will be available in March next year. In more queer comic news, openly gay actor George Takei, famous for his role as Sulu in the original Star Trek series, has appeared as himself in the latest issue of Archie Comics. In the latest issue 6, Takei meets Kevin Keller, an openly gay character from the series, at a science fiction convention. According to Takei, who is a longtime comic book fan, "With Archie Comics, it's a fun way and a natural way and an ideal way of advocating happily." And now, in the weird and the wonderful, just when you thought Star Trek was all science fiction, looks like another amazing gadget from the series has become a science fact. Regular listeners will remember that a few weeks ago I discussed the invention of a warp drive engine. This time, it's the amazing Star Trek tricorder, that medical device they use to instantly understand what's wrong with people.
Diagnosis, please.
The Scanadu Scout, available for retail purchase sometime next year, is a small hardware device that reads your personal vital information in mere seconds based on contact. By simply holding the device to your temple, vital information, including your heart rate variability and blood oxygenation, will be read and sent to an app on your iPhone or Android for you to of you in like 2 seconds. Wow.
I think it's weird that people have it for their iPhone though.
It is a bit weird. There seems to be an app for everything.
Yeah, I'm like, shouldn't That's it go to I doctors?
I know. Yeah, it's just so you can review if you're having a heart attack.
Don't go to the doctor.
Stroke.
Use this little poll.
Yeah. And finally, to celebrate the new Fantasyland expansion at Disney World, Florida, the park created and flew a giant fire-breathing dragon over Beast Castle in a one-time-only fantasy promotional event on December 5th. Those lucky enough to be there not only witnessed the giant beast flying over one of the newest additions to the park, but also actually saw it breathe real fire.
And became barbecue.
Exactly. And that's it for the news
and
this time.
And Disney barbecue. Thanks, Doctor. Beddoes.
Oh, that's okay.
Ooh la la.
That's cool. Look, I want a Yoda head. Definitely.
Yes, an Yoda's original head. Yoda head.
Yeah. Why not?
That would be pretty awesome.
What about Jar Jar's head?
I think they put that on a stake and then, like a wooden stake and maybe
Jar Jar.
Rotten fruit at it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I like also, Jar Jar. Other news, Gail Simone, you've probably heard about this, is no longer writing for Batgirl, so that is a disappointment. Now, at the moment, there are only two females who are writing fully realized characters at DC Comics. Shame, DC, shame. Mm. What's going on there? Now, Gail Simone, of course, in the Wonder Woman movie, she was in that because she was doing Wonder Woman for DC, mm-hmm. and then she did Batgirl, and she got Batgirl out of her wheelchair. Mm. So it's just interesting. That Batgirl was once disabled and now is able-bodied. Mm. But what will happen to the character now that Gail's left? And there's seems to be no reason for why she's being sacked, basically.
Yeah.
So it's a bit weird. Anyway.
It's a mystery.
Know. Maybe too many toilet breaks. It could be anything. Late to work. Maybe she was 10 minutes late to work. Like, you know, people get fired. I used to get fired.
KPIs. Well, that's you, though.
I got fired once for being late
You're
the time.
You're not Batgirl.
You're not that girl.
Or Wonder Woman.
Okay, we're going to go to an interview now that Sonia did with Mr. Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a gentleman, as we said earlier, who won the competition at Art Boy Gallery with his cardboard kind of stencils or screen
not
print.
Stencils, not screen prints either.
Something. cardboard. Does he explain how he did it in the interview?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well then maybe let's just go straight to that. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. And on the telephone line we've got Mr. Duke. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Now, part of the reason we've got you talking to us this evening is about one of the awesome facts that you are the recipient, or I guess the winner of something called Fanboy versus Horror Boy. No, Art Boy versus Fanboy. And it was the horror topic that they had for a very recent exhibition that was on the 23rd of November. How do you feel about that?
Quite good. To be honest, I didn't actually know that there was a competition on, so...
Oh, okay, so...
Well, I just thought it was an exhibition, so I entered, and then Mark from the gallery contacted me and told me that I had won, so I was quite excited about that, and I saw my Pennywise piece.
Yeah, that's right, from Stephen King.
Yeah, the It one. That's one of my favourite pieces, so I was actually quite happy to win for that one. So.
Well, when we saw it, Mitch and I, who's my co-host presenter here on Sci-Fi and Scream, when we saw it, it was hard because there was a lot of different work there, quite a diverse range, and good stuff too, but you got us straight away, not just with the theme of being, horror and particularly Pennywise, but also, importantly, was the technique. And that sort of made you surge ahead of the crowd and made it quite easy for us to choose you as the winner. So congratulations.
Thank you. People don't really know what they're looking at when they see it quite often.
How do you describe it then?
It's cardboard, corrugated cardboard, like cardboard boxes and stuff, cut into strips, and I drill them and I put rods through them and stack them on top of each other. So it's sort of looking at you and it'll be like, I suppose, a car radiator. And the little corrugations are facing you. And then I push the little corrugations down. And I suppose if you imagine each corrugation as one pixel. When I push it down, it turns sort of a lighter shade. And when it's open, it's dark. So you could say like black and white pixels, really. So when you first look at it and trying to explain that to someone, I've had people looking at it for quite a while. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I've got it. And they sort of get quite excited because they've worked out what I've done. So, but yeah, that's basically it. Until you actually sort of see, I suppose, a picture of it or in person, it's hard to sort of picture in your head because I haven't really seen anything else like it to sort of refer people to. It makes it hard when you sort of describe it, and it sort of changes in different lights as well and different angles. Yeah. So, yeah, or you can go to the Art Boy Gallery page and they have all my pictures up there, but I've got down the gallery, so I'll just go in there in person and look at them.
Hi, I'm Tara Buck. I play Ginger, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
That was the king of glam rock himself, David Bowie, with Diamond Dogs on Joy FM.
David Bowie with Diamond Dogs. Mm. I love that. It's based on 1984, George Orwell's 1984, apparently.
Mm.
So what are we going to talk about now? We have a lovely, lovely review about Comic-Con episode 4, and this is a documentary that Sonia watched recently.
Yes, it is. I will not leave that con until I get those figures.
Do you want to play the trailer? Do you want to play the trailer?
Yeah, let's play the trailer.
Let's play a bit of a trailer.
Let's do that.
Bit of a trailer. This is for Comic-Con, episode 4.
Welcome to Comic-Con.
Sit in my chair. Let me make you look dead. Buckets off, everybody.
I'll never forget the first time I took a peek next to a stormtrooper and a Klingon. That could only happen at Comic-Con.
Okay, we're good.
All right, guys.
I was looking out my hotel room window and I saw three Ninja Turtles really impatiently checking their watches.
Where? Excuse me. You have to check that in.
In the mind of every comic book fiend, Comic-Con is just the answer to all your prayers. It's like heaven, in as much as, like they always tell you, when you go to heaven, everything you've ever lost is going to come back to you.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam, and that's the trailer to something called Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope. Yes, it's a play on words, obviously, for Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. For those who don't know what that is, why you tuned into us on Sci-Fi and Squeam. And a thanks to James again from Eltham. He loves David Bowie.
Don't we all love a bit of Bowie?
We do. A lot of Bowie. Or Bowie. A little Bowie, big Bowie. Okay, now this is directed, the movie. The documentary is directed and produced by Morgan Spurlock, but it's also produced by Stanley, Thomas Tull, and that guy called Joss Whedon. It came out in 2011 at the Toronto International Film Festival. Running time is 88 minutes. It's now available at last in Australia, but on DVD. It didn't get a cinema release here, more's the pity. And this is through Madman Entertainment Australia. So, pretty much, this is a film about, from the earliest days, it talks about what was initially a swap meet, a gathering of the tribes of nerds and geeks for comics. It is now pop culture's probably biggest niche or mainstream convention in history, living history. It is an annual affair. It is legendary. And over 4 days in the American summer, you can find any kind of geek or nerd, from TV to film to anime to cosplay, panels so diverse from science fiction to horror panels to TV shows, all selling their wares, all promoting the year to come. Now, Comic-Con, this documentary, was made in 2010 when it was first produced. So it does talk about 2010 and 2011 news items and so forth. So in 1970, it was about 300 people that went to the Comic-Con in San Diego, and now it's estimated to be more than 140,000 people. Now, usually what we expect with a Morgan Spurlock movie is some of the intrepid kind of digging he does as a type of journalist, looking into media and so forth, dissecting that type of thing and looking at the background of his topic, like he did with Super Size Me. But in this film, that's not the case. Such is the dilemma. I found that I wanted to find out more about the background to Comic-Con, and especially about the commercialization and how it's been overrun by massive, massive companies and interests like Lucasfilm and so forth. But that's not what I came away with at all. I think that's a pity, because I expected Spurlock to start dissecting, but that's not what happened. In fact, he does not even appear in the documentary. Could this be because Joss Whedon and Stan Lee, by way of Marvel/Disney, are the producers and people that helped fund this film? Maybe. So maybe we're seeing a sanitized version of a Comic-Con, the biggest of its kind, and I would have liked to have seen a lot more investigation and more journalistic techniques to this film. But it does have some amazing guests and cameos in it. Felicia Day, Joss Whedon, of course, Kevin Smith, the list goes on. Dr. Beddoes.
Look, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I see what you're saying about the lack of journalistic inquiry, but I felt that in some ways it presented quite a balanced view, because in some ways it felt like a fan tribute. It was celebrating, you know, the hordes of fans and the whole idea of the fan tribe and belonging to a community and finding your home there. But they did touch on that more cynical side of, you know, corporate takeover. I mean, particularly with the story of the comic book dealer who was struggling to meet his, you know, profit margins. And he was lamenting the fact that Comic-Con was no longer really about comics, and there weren't as many people actually interested in getting involved in that. So I feel like they did touch on it to a certain extent, but I guess you're right. It wasn't as cynical and hard hitting as it could have been. But maybe they wanted it to be. Maybe they didn't want it to be too hard hitting. I mean, they did have that lovely romantic fan engagement story, so there was a bit of light and fluffy in there. You know, I guess you can take from it what you will. As a fangirl, it's easy for me to romanticize the whole idea of the fan clan and the idea of belonging. But, you know, you do think over 140,000 people each year. Geek culture is no longer a niche. That's mainstream.
And can all those fans be happy? I mean, look at the queues. You see the queues there and you think, wow. I've heard that it's a very, you know, tight, well-organized machine, Comic-Con.
Yeah.
But I did wonder about some of the aspiring illustrators and comic artists like Eric, who's hoping to get published and land a job, and Skip, who's much more sort of, I would say, a little bit more airy-fairy.
Mm-hmm.
These are real people. He's an amateur illustrator as well. He wants to be discovered. And I think a lot of people's dreams probably get crashed because they're not prepared to face the real facts of these are professional publishing houses, some as big as Marvel and DC, and they only apparently want the best. So,
yeah, that's true.
Some
I mean,
people get,
there would be a lot of just excitable fanboys that and fangirls who think that just because they love and enjoy these comics and these movies and whatnot, that they will be able to just stroll up to, you know, the DC stand and show them their drawings and land
Batman.
A job.
Love me.
Yeah, so there would be a lot of soul crushing in that aspect. But it's very consumer driven as well. I mean, people like pushing each other and racing past each other to get to be the first in line to buy the collectible figurine
toy.
I mean,
the
it's
race
madness.
For toys, it's just can't call them toys, can we? But the race for collectible figurines is quite amazing.
Yes,
one bit I did like about it was Guillermo del Toro talks about his obsession as a collector and the great filmmaker. We talk about Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, that's quite interesting. He's obviously obsessive.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good film in that respect, but I actually wanted a little bit more. I wanted it to dig a bit deeper to ask those questions about commercialization, about what is happening to the comics industry, the online comics industry, and those sort of things. I felt it was a little bit fan light, really.
Sanitized.
And a bit diluted. Mm. So I'm giving it 2 out of 5.
Ooh, harsh.
Ooh. What would you give it?
Oh, I'd give it a 3.5 out of 5.
3.5. Yeah. Okay. Look, it's still entertaining.
Mm.
And it's great with all those cameos of those people, some of those people we mentioned, and the journey of some of the fans as well, particularly the cosplayer, is pretty impressive.
Indeed.
So watch it. If you get a chance to get the DVD, do so. That's Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy in 94.9.
It's hard to scream without a tongue.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, and it is yet again the end of an hour show, so the hour goes by so fast.
Where did it go?
I want to say thanks to Mr. Duke. If you want to hear the full interview with that artist from Bendigo, who was the winner of the Art Boy competition, we will have that podcasted in full in a few days' time.
And
cheers.
Also, for anyone who did want to kind of follow up on Asian horror, there's a list of movies that you should start watching, and that's, we spoke about Tale of Two Sisters from 2003, Tusa with Love, another good one is The Ring, like a default The Ring, and The Grudge.
And Dumplings.
And a movie from Hong Kong called Dumplings, so you can search like Dumplings Horror or something like that. Also, Audition, From Japan, and also The Eye from Hong Kong, which is really interesting.
The Eye is really quite twisted. I really like that one.
And possibly don't search for dumplings if you actually have just eaten dumplings.
Yeah, don't do that.
Maybe just, yeah.
Thank you so much to Emma Beddoes for the news, and thank you, Sonia, for the reviews and interviews. And yeah, coming up next week, we might have a Christmas special beginning, or we might have more of something amazing.
Or end of the world.
Or end of the world, it is.
Just in time for the Mayan calendar on the 21st of December, the end of the world, we're just preempting the apocalypse.
I also have to say, like, if you go out on that night, you have to be careful because it's, I think people
will
be going crazy.
Around.
Yeah, I think people will be getting drunk and going crazy at the end of the world parties. Like, I've been invited to three so far, so
really,
I don't imagine they'd be fun to be, like, full of drugs and crazy.
Really?
And
I would just be sitting around waiting in the dark.
I'll be just playing Pokemon. Like, you don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
What's the doctor going to do?
Oh, I will probably be doing something very, very sad and geeky. Sitting at home with my cat watching Star Wars.
Yeah.
Possibly. It's very likely. Just chilling out.
Great. All right.
Chilling, cruising, whatever.
Pretty much.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. Good night, guys.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together.
But human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Tuesday nights from 10 on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.